And then they come to us telling you got to vote for the lesser of two evils. You still get evil when you vote the lesser of two evils, right? Like, I always tell people in New York, either we taking the six from the Bronx locally to hell, or we're taking it express. Either way, I'm not trying to go to hell.
From First Look Media and Panoply, this is Politically Reactive. I'm Debbie Kamau Bell.
And I'm the winner of the 2016 Mr. South India America Queens Division, Hari Kundabolu.
There he is.
The big scandal? I really live in Brooklyn. Oh, for me, you should have. Thank you. Gracias. Thank you in French. Also, thank you.
The show where two comedians try to make sense of politics in America.
Or cry trying.
Our guest today is Rosa Clemente. She's a journalist, community organizer, speaker, hip-hop activist, and proud member of the Green Party.
In 2008, she ran on the Green Party ticket as their vice presidential nominee with Cynthia McKinney.
I'm really proud to bring forth particularly the voice of a hip-hop generation. And this is how hip-hop started, with 10 people or 20 people in the basement, with 30 or 40 people in the South Bronx, with 100 people in the park.
And as we get down to the wire to election day and are told that our choices are these two,
I concluded it wasn't. I wrote about that.
So is it President Obama's fault? Is it President Obama's fault?
Before you even announced. Look, there
Secretary,
are different.
Is it President there... Obama's fault?
Many people are asking, hey, why is it just these two? One of those Americans is our favorite backup quarterback, Colin Kaepernick.
You have Hillary, who's called black teens or black kids super predators. You have Donald Trump, who's openly racist.
Oh, man, that dude's awesome. Hey, come on, we should get him on the show.
I know. It's not like he's busy playing.
Man, just cost us a chance to get Kaepernick. Today, we're going to dig into third-party politics with Rosa. What does she want the Green Party to look like today? What are we losing by sticking to this age-old two-party system?
Also, we'll explain more aspects of hip-hop culture to our older white listeners.
And we'll also explain who Ralph Nader is to our millennial listeners and how many people think he's the reason Al Gore lost the 2000 election.
Al Gore's the reason Al Gore lost the 2000 election.
You're the reason Al Gore lost the 2000 election.
I'm on the Supreme Court.
It's all coming up on Politically Reactive. Hey, Harry, what's going on?
I don't know, man. It's raining in New York. Everybody's in a rush. They got umbrellas. It's very uncomfortable. I realize the purpose of these umbrellas is to not get wet, but New Yorkers being frantic with umbrellas, it's like all these people just want to poke my eyes out. I know that's not their intention, but I keep thinking to myself, why do all these strangers want to poke my eyes out? They just keep spinning them umbrellas. So yeah, that's how I'm doing, man.
I mean, I got to be honest. I'm going to guess that not all of them want to poke your eyes out, but some of them do.
Oh, man, You've been eating whatever they're feeding you. Illuminati.
Your reputation precedes you. So some of those people might be like, oh, my God, that's mainstream American comic Hari Kundabolu. I'm going to poke his eyes out.
Oh, my God, I'm going to get this underneath his glasses and poke his fucking eyes out.
Exactly. At least one person. I'm going to say at least one person.
Right.
Well, today we're actually going to be talking to Rosa Clemente, who I think she thinks that mainstream American politics wants to poke all of our eyes out.
Great segue, my man.
Thank you. Thank you.
We got to talk to her this summer, August 22nd. It was great.
Yeah, and Rosa is doing this awesome speaking tour right now called Truth to Power. She's traveling to college campuses all over. Please check it out. You can find dates and info at rosaclemente.net. This is a great episode. She's a powerful speaker, and she's a powerful advocate, not only for the Green Party, but just third parties in general. I think the things she mentions that are covered here are not really covered in a lot of in the two-party system we have. And also in other news, just in a related story, I was just recently in Charlotte. I did a show at UNC Charlotte, and it was great. You know, as we all know, the Charlotte uprising is happening right now in the wake of the killing of Keith Lamont Scott by Charlotte police officers. And so, yeah, there were a lot of activists at the show. I got to meet some after the show. There's a group called Customer 49. They're a UNC Charlotte leftist student organizing group fighting to secure justice for students and oppressed communities. They support Black Lives Matter, Trans Lives Matters, No Dapple. Yeah, so it was a bunch of cool, I felt it's one thing. They were all younger than me, and yes, and yet I felt like I was like, I hope I'm doing this comedy thing right for you guys. I hope I'm helping. I hope I'm not making it worse. And they took a picture with me, which is the official. You're not making it worse, I think, because they actually wanted to be seen with me in a photo.
These are the moments I realized that you are much more courageous than I am, because I was whining a few minutes ago just about not wanting to walk in the rain and how people might be trying to tear my eyes out with their umbrellas. And then you talked about going to Charlotte.
But you say that. But then when I was at the show last night and I was talking to these students, they actually mentioned Ashley Williams, who we've talked about on the podcast before. Ashley Williams, who famously interrupted Hillary Clinton at a fundraising dinner to talk to her about Black Lives Matter, was kicked out. And they're like, yeah, would you like to talk to Ashley Williams sometime? I'm like, yeah, I sure would. Is she here? They're like, no, she's actually in the streets right now doing the work. And I was like, oh, yeah. So the show isn't the work. She's actually...
That's why I hate when people say you and I are activists. I'm like, are we though?
Yeah.
Are we really though?
Yeah.
Ashley Williams might be an activist. That sounds real activist-y.
Yeah,
that's putting a butt in the line.
Yeah, she's definitely real activist-y. So maybe we can actually get her on the show. That would be great.
Yes.
And other news that is not being covered by mainstream news. I mean, the Charlotte thing is, but not maybe from the correct angle. There's a prison strike that's been going on since September 9th. It was started as on the 45th anniversary of the Attica Uprising. It's been described as the largest strike in the history of prisons. There's allegedly 20 prisons are involved. I say allegedly because there's probably more that just we haven't heard about. And we hope to talk about it on the show, but in classic fashion, one of our old guests is already all over it. Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! Decided to, spend some time covering news that the mainstream media doesn't cover. Surprise, surprise. I think she's going in a different direction.
Today, striking prisoners are protesting long-term isolation, inadequate health care, overcrowding, violent attacks, and slave labor.
Amy Goodman. Yes, come on, Amy.
And if people didn't recognize my sarcasm, she always covers stories that the mainstream media doesn't cover. And this story is no different. It's not getting a lot of coverage in mainstream media or any coverage in some of the major outlets. But Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! All over it, of course.
Just absolutely remarkable work. Goddamn. Amy Goodman.
The undisputed champion. All right. Now let's listen to that Rosa conversation again.
Hey, Rosa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, for people who aren't too familiar with the Green Party, can you tell us what the Green Party's platform is and how it differs from the Democratic Party?
The Green Party platform differs in so many ways from the Democratic platform. And I think when it comes to elections, most people don't ever read the platforms of the parties, right? You know, they're long documents and they are what they are, documents, and it takes people to see them through. But some of the most notable things in the Green Party are issues that always been like near and dear, I think, to particularly African-American and Latino communities here in the United States. Amnesty for all those that are undocumented, you know, being forefront on every environmental issue, having in the mid 1980s said that there should be complete equality for LGBTQ people, including the right of marriage as an institution, as well as trying to get rid in one way of the Electoral College so we have more of a participatory democracy. The Green Party takes no corporate money, never has, no lobbyist money, as well as has called for reparations and end to mass incarceration, the freedom of political prisoners, that Puerto Rico no longer be a colony of the United States. Infrastructure building in this country, a job for everyone, a cut in the military budget, and recently has really come to the forefront around the issue of student loan debt. So I always tell people Bernie Sanders was not the first one talking about student loan debt. And in fact, he was talking about a restructuring of the debt where we in the Green Party call for complete elimination of all student loan debt, no matter how young you are, no matter how old you are, and still have that debt.
So you're like the We Want It Now party, like everything that maybe the Democratic left adopts 20 or 30 years later. The Green Party's already covered it way before and has been on it from that point on.
Yeah, and it keeps progressing in the platform itself. So this year, there was an anti-capitalist amendment adopted to say, why are we living in a country of such wealth with such disparities? What about guaranteeing everyone in the country a I guess we would call like a yearly stipend for living, right? And why don't we have universal health care and take all the money out of that? So, yeah, the platform has been steadily and steadily progressing, even around the issue of Palestine and the right of return for the Palestinian people, which even the Democratic Party, that was a big split this year in their own party platform convening. So, yeah, we've been on it for a minute.
What do you say to people? Because I live in Berkeley, California, which is, you know, firmly Bernie Sanders country, but also firmly there's a lot of Green Party out here. And I feel like even my lefty Democratic friends are like sort of roll their eyes at the Green Party because they feel like the Green Party is asking for too much and, you know, sort of thinks all this stuff is pie in the sky. How do you talk to people like that?
Well, I mean, we spend like trillions of dollars on war. So if we were to cut half of the military budget, we could get everything that the Green Party asked for that has an economic cost to it, you know?
Hold up, wait a minute.
So get this. The U.S. spends around $600 billion a year on military and defense. PolitiFact says that's roughly three times more than China's spending, seven times more than Russia's spending. In fact, the U.S. spends more on defense than the next seven countries combined.
Let's think about that number, $600 billion. It's half of the federal discretionary budget. It's six times the education budget. It's seven times the transportation budget. And it's over 30 times NASA's budget. We could be living on Mars right now. Isn't that Gary Johnson's foreign policy plan?
I don't know. He might go, what's Mars? Is that an acronym?
I mean, all he had to say is, let me look up Mars and I'll get back. I'm going to talk to my Mars policy people and I'll get back to you.
Look, this is 2016 and the disparity between rich and poor is growing. And I think not growing, it has exploded, right? I think people who roll their eyes are those that believe that the Democratic Party could be progressive. I say the Democratic Party is where progressive politics go to die, you know, and Hillary Clinton is not in any way even what we would think of what a Democrat would be like. She's a light Republican moderate at this point. So I would roll my eyes back and then say, why are we in a country where 14 million people are on food stamps? Why are we in a country that has one homeless young person? Why are we in a country where we have students indebted? I'm 45 years old and I still have $150,000 to pay off in my student loan. And that's unacceptable. If we can spend $1 trillion on wars, we can spend that much money on the people.
How do you tell Democrats in this election to vote for the Green Party? Because the question ends up becoming between this is a practical vote, I need to vote for Hillary Clinton to avoid Donald Trump, or I have to vote my conscience and I don't like either of them. So how do you tell a person in who are in those two situations to vote for the Green Party?
Yeah, I don't tell Democrats anything. Democrats are going to vote how they're going to vote for Democrats. I'm going after the over 50 million people that still won't participate in this election, the over 60% of African-American, Latino young people that participate in no election and have a reason why they don't participate in an election. And they're pretty good reasons. And, you know, I disagree with some of my Green Party colleagues who are fighting very hard to get Bernie Sanders supporters. My thing is, why aren't we going into the most marginalized, dispossessed communities where no one is voting, period? And they have great reasons why they're not voting. Why aren't we going to those folks? Because I really think in the last 8 years, particularly the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have become a party of elites, right? So it's, in fact, voting is becoming to me, I mean, it's my opinion, an elitist political project where massive amounts of people are marginalized from that process, from everything to having to show ID. What about people who work two jobs and cannot take time off to vote? What if you have to wait 8 hours to vote? What if you go up there and your name's not on the roll? What if you go up there and your name is on the roll and they don't take your ID?
Hold up, wait a minute.
So currently voting in America is kind of like a Japanese game show, or if you will, it's kind of like that ripoff of Japanese game shows, ABC's Wipeout. There's about 8 million obstacles between you wanting to do your civic duty and you actually doing it. There's the time you have to take off from work, the waiting in long lines, the surly poll workers, the hanging chads, the broken voting machines. Occasionally there's a dangling participle. And that's if you're registered to vote and you actually ended up at the right polling place. You got to look that up on your computer, or you got to call somebody and they move it around. One time I voted in a Starbucks. In a Starbucks! For Obama. What if that was all just easier?
Or at least in an independent coffee shop. Take Sweden. The Swedish government automatically registers its citizens to vote. And voting is mandatory in Australia. And you know what voter turnout is in those countries? 96%. Or maybe we should take a cue from Austria. Or Belgium. Or Brazil. France. Germany. India. New Zealand. Or lots of other countries who hold elections on weekends or holidays. My friend Nikki Fisher from the Bus Project helped pass automatic voter registration for Oregon. Seems like we should do that for everyone.
Yeah, guys, we don't need to wipe out on voting.
Did you just make that joke? Are you still in comedy, my man? You still doing comedy? Is that a thing you're still doing? You just give up comedy with that line?
I thought it was a nice closer. Like, it sort of brought it all together. It's not a good closer.
I don't know, man.
A callback?
Okay. Okay, but stick to improv, man.
Okay. Voting is such a hard thing to do when it should be the easiest civic duty to do. And then when we begin to look at the crux of the electoral political system, I think a lot of brothers and sisters out there of all stripes, all ethnicities, all gender or non-gender conforming, may have a better understanding that the system is not, I won't use the word rigged to sound like Donald Trump, but it doesn't bode well for democracy. And those that are often left out are the poorest and most working class marginalized folks. And those happen to be Black and brown folks. And a lot of them, like I said, are not going to vote in this election and won't vote in any election.
You said there were reasons for that. Could you lay out some of those reasons?
Well, I mean, I think voting doesn't really get you freedom, right? Voting is a tactic, and it's one to be used particularly in our local communities when we want to do something in our communities or when we want to hold power accountable. But how could people not be discouraged from a system where these two presidential candidates are going to spend over $4 billion in this election? We're in a system that if you are someone who is working and you want to run for office and you live in a big city, it could take you millions of dollars. A Senate race alone could take $40 to $50 million. So just the money in politics keeps out so much of the 99%. And then we've seen time after time where particularly African-American, Latino people have voted. They voted Democrats. For the Democrats, and look at some of the cities where we've had the rebellions in the last 2 years. Ferguson, an all-democratically elected government. Baltimore, an all-democratically Black elected government. Look at New York. People thought de Blasio was going to be so-called progressive. He's been regressive when it comes to the demands of what people want around police. Homelessness has gone up. Affordable housing hardly exists in New York. So I feel like young cats in the street get it. They're like, don't come to us with the BS. We're living this life every day. You come here, promises after promises, empty promises. In our communities in 2016, in a time of so much innovation and technology, why are our communities in worse economic conditions than before the Civil Rights Bill got passed? Young kids might not have the historical analysis, but they know the everyday reality. And most of them also know that there is no job or there is no prospect of them ever just working one job, that they're going to have to work two, maybe three jobs just to make ends meet. And most of those ends meeting are just to pay rent. So it's not even about being able to keep your promises. You make promises as a politician with the intent of having those things done, and then you encounter government. So you have to know how to negotiate and work government, right? But a lot of our politicians straight up have sold the people out. And a lot of them have done it willingly, unabashed. You know, they don't care, and they're unapologetic about it. And then they come to us telling, particularly, like, Democratic people, well, you got to vote for the lesser of two evils. You still get evil when you vote the lesser of two evils, right? Like, I always tell people in New York, like, how are you in New York? So I'm like, either we taking the six from the Bronx locally to hell, or we're taking it express. Either way, I'm not trying to go to hell. So, you know, like, we got, and so what I'm saying is I think those of us who have the ability, whether we're professors and political commentators, to really like discourse and have massive amounts of conversation and even somehow be in proximity to that, we're not living in these most distressed neighborhoods. And most of these distressed neighborhoods are made up of young Black and brown people, and they're not trying to hear it.
So I have a question about the money part of it, because certainly I hear what you're saying, like the billions of dollars are going to be spent on the presidential election. And it would be great to take money out of politics, but that's not going to happen before Election Day in November.
Right.
Should the Green Party be looking to get some money from some? Like, I feel like, because can you, the platform is great and everything, and I fully support all that stuff. And I also feel like, should Jill Stein be going to some big billionaire and like, look, if you can give me $500 million so I can get a presence in the national conversation. I mean, I get would that be compromising the ideals?
No, I mean, corporate money is something different, right? So, like, we're not taking money from Wall Street bankers like Hillary Clinton did, or private prisons like Hillary Clinton did and has, right? It means no corporate money, no lobbyist money. It doesn't mean, like, if John Legend didn't want to drop 10 mil, go ahead, come out.
Oh, wait, you know, I think you've confused my bank account with John Legend's bank account, first
of
all.
I know. No, but, you know, wanting to give money, well, private donations are unlimited. You know, yeah. Now the Green Party, Jill Stein has said she doesn't want PAC money. My take is if I was running, I'd want some PAC money that's progressive and liberal. And I would do the Hollywood thing. I would do the artist thing, because I actually, in all my life as an organizer, I've always worked side by side with artists. And I understand artists in this sense that not all of them want to be forefront, but some of them will rock a plan and they might do it anonymously. And I'd be down with that. You know, so I don't necessarily agree with the PAC money that Jill has decided not to take. I respect her for that. And I think one of the other things is we should be really continuing to talk about taking not only money out of politics, dark money, as they call it, but also we have to get rid of Citizens United, right? And what the Supreme Court did in passing, where corporation lobbyists could give unlimited donations. Because I swear, like, by the time 2020 comes, our president might be sponsored by Coca-Cola. And, you know, and who wants that? Because we already see what money has done, especially when it comes to local offices. We focus a lot on federal offices, but when it comes to those real local offices, including the district attorney and those kind of things, that type of money, corporate money, lobbyist money, you know, it skews who's able to even get in the race. And I think that is unconscionable. I think anyone who wants to run should be able to run.
Sort of building off what you're saying about the local thing, does it even make sense for the Green Party to focus on national elections? Like you're talking about a lot of those young brothers and sisters who are living in the neighborhoods and don't have access to, or aren't voting and have actually feel like the system's not supporting them, which I agree with. Doesn't it make more sense if the Green Party like hyper-focused on local elections and sort of stayed out of the national election thing, just because it's such a moonshot to get into that position? To, like, you know, if a Green Party candidate won, it would be, you know, they'd be studying that for years. Whereas, like, maybe there's a bigger chance at winning local elections.
Yeah, we have to run a federal we have to run in federal elections to keep our ballot line open.
Oh, wow.
And then with keeping our ballot line open, we have to also fight for ballot access on each state, right? And actually, the Democrats sue the most to keep us off the ballots in elections, like 60% more. Lawsuits come from the Democrats trying to bump us out of states, right? So my take when I ran in 08 was that what we need to build for the next 4 to 8 years, which would have been now, is to run massive amount of local candidates. Now, the Greens have over 100 elected local officials throughout the country, from school board to water supervisor, a couple mayors, but we haven't won any statewide offices. What I think the larger question is, a lot of people don't know how these things work. So then they're like, oh, just stop trying to run for president. No, we have to. And then, in fact, if we get 5% of the total electorate, we're a permanent party, which means we don't have to fight that hard to be on every state ballot. Right now, Jill is fighting to be on every state ballot. Is it going to happen? No, because there's 5 lawsuits pending right now from Democrats and the latest one in Virginia to keep us off the ballot. But she will be on the most probably ever. I think she'll garner 45 states, which is the most the Green Party has ever been on. Right. And then the larger question is, people will be like, well, you're not going to win. Well, you don't just run a campaign for a personal win. We got to break the 2-party system. There is no way that we should be living in a country where there is not more than 2 parties on the ballot, that more than 2 parties that people know about, and more than 2 people that are allowed to debate. That, to me, is really completely undemocratic. And that, to me, is not participatory in any way. And that, to me, seems then I will use the word rigged and corrupt, so that these 2 parties are always exchanging power. Even with a president, Hillary Clinton, I'm not one to be as stupid and cynical to be like, she's worse than Donald Trump. No, she's not. But she's not good enough for what we need now as a people. But even if she does win the election, right, most of these states are controlled by Republican state houses.
For more on that, go check out our amazing episode on gerrymandering with David Daley, or buy his book, Rat Fucked.
Also, you'll learn how to pronounce it the right way. Gerrymandering. Gerrymandering.
And look at the kind of policies that are coming down from a state to a local level that no president is going to be able to address in mass, that the states have to do it. So I want to see a lot more younger people, multiracial younger people, running for every type of office, but I want to see them doing under the Green Party.
How much does the 2000 election and the legacy of Ralph Nader affect people's perceptions of the Green Party, for better or worse? I mean, do people still bring up the 2000 election mm-hmm. and the fact that, you know, Gore would have won if all the Greens had voted for a Democrat? I mean, does that still come up all these years later?
Yeah, I think for older people, not for younger folks. I think over 40, yes. Under, no. And that's not even true. Al Gore did win that election. Al Gore won that election by 427 votes. And we know that because the New York Times did a 1-year investigative piece on that. And the Supreme Court is the one that stopped the recount in Florida, which essentially, to me, selected Bush. Right. And even if all those people have voted for Gore, the outcome would have been the same because of what happened in Florida. Right. And the stealing of the election, straight up. And, you know, that's all I could say about that. It comes up a lot for folks, especially in the media, and especially for a lot of Democratic political commentators, you know, and that's the way I answer it, with facts. And no one loses an election because of another candidate. You lose the election because you didn't get the people that you needed to vote for you.
Also, let's remember, I always go back to this point. Al Gore lost his home state of Tennessee. Like, as Chris Rock famously said, like, if I ran for president, I know I'd win Brooklyn. You know, like, I feel like
he made a mistake by not having Clinton with him at that time. And, you know, that was a political mistake that his campaign manager, Donna Brazile, you know, has copped to. And it happens, you know, and that's what I'm saying. You lose elections because you're not appealing to maybe your base, or you haven't expanded your base, not because of another candidate running.
Hey, Hari, do you have a new comedy CD out?
Yes, I do, Kamau. It's funny you mentioned that. My album, Mainstream American Comic, is out right now on Kill Rock Stars. How about you, Kamau?
That's funny you mentioned that. I also have a new comedy album out on Kill Rock Stars, and it's called Semi-Prominent Negro.
Huh. I wonder what people can do with that knowledge that both those albums are out at the same time.
Well, they can go to killrockstars.com and buy digital copies or real copies of both those things. In fact, I think they should buy both of them.
Man, what a brilliant suggestion. I absolutely agree.
Hey, everybody. I want to let you guys know about this super special show I'm doing this month in the Bay Area. It's the one-year anniversary show for my live radio talk show and podcast, Kamau Right Now. Our guest panel is amazing in an Oprah way. We have one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, Alicia Garza. We have new Bay Area resident and also the host of Death, Sex, and Money, Anna Sale. And we have the head writer of Inside, Amy Schumer, Jesse Klein. Anyway, it's going to be a big party. There will be great live music, awkward talks, lots of hugs with the audience. It's October 27th at the Norse Theater in San Francisco in partnership with City Arts and Lectures. And even if you don't live in the Bay, you can listen live and tweet at us during the show. Go to KALW.org for tickets and also to subscribe to the podcast and to listen live. Hurry, you've been on the show. It was pretty fun, yeah?
Yeah, it was fun. And I was great.
Again, please check out Kamau Right Now on October 27th by going to KALW.org.
You ran for the vice president on the Green Party ticket in 2008, and that's the Obama election, the first Obama election. What was that like running against a phenomenon, the way Obama was a phenomenon during that election? And also, did it help the Green Party at all just because I would imagine there was a lot of young people that were energized by it, a lot of people who were more left and maybe had given up on electoral politics. Did that lead to more Green Party voters?
Well, I ran in 08 and Cynthia McKinney picked me as her vice presidential candidate and the Green Party nominated us in Chicago. You know, first we didn't have social media, right? Like Twitter was not even around. And Facebook had just started. So I think so much has happened in the last 8 years. Where the Obama campaign was most effective is having a vision of how to reach young people through technological means and perfected that. And ran a hell of an amazing campaign, you know, period. So what was it like? I mean, you know, when I did it, I was only 35. I just turned 35. I was basically didn't have a place to live and had a child and a husband to take care of. And I was like, sure, why not? I'll run for vice president. I was really like naive in the sense of I really thought that many of the formations and people that I had organized with, especially as a hip hop activist and a longtime community organizer by then, would have rocked with me. And most of them didn't. You know, there's still people to this day that called me that week and said, you're making the biggest mistake of your life. I will never invite you to an event. I won't talk to you. That still don't. I had a lot of cancellations of gigs. I didn't talk. I didn't work for almost 2 years. And neither did Cynthia because no one would hire us. So the reason I did it was because when I had been a Green Party member since my college years in the late 90s. But when I really read the platform, I was like, wait, this is everything we're saying as a hip hop community that we want. So I'm going to rock with this. And then I think parcel with the fact that I've always felt like I've been on the margins, especially around how I identify as a Black Puerto Rican, that I was okay with being on the margins. And then I was really like, yo, that Black man is not going to do, like, it's not going to free Black people. Like, are you really hearing what he's saying? Because inside a lot of people's minds, there's these things that people think Obama promised, which he really never did promise all of that. But I also, as a historian, I understood the historical moment that we were in. And I always think you need an opposition voice to what is the mainstream voice. Those are the reasons I did it. The ramifications were intense afterwards. The sexism was at levels that I had never experienced in my life. And within the Green Party, the racism of some of the white men in the Green Party, I mean, to the point where our own party took us off a state ballot because they viewed me and Cynthia as too Black and too radical. So they would rather not have someone, and that was Colorado. The Green Party, Colorado, literally took us off the ballot. But I always tell people I don't regret one thing because I always stand with my politics and my conscience. And often that leaves me, like I said, on the margins, but it leaves me in great company in history. So I'm all right with it.
Rosa, we have a handful of older white listeners, like a handful. Can you explain what hip-hop activism is and what it means in 2016?
Sure. I mean, hip-hop activism was coined by Harry Allen, who was with the Public Enemy camp. He was the in-house publicist and a great journalist on his own, and just an amazing thinker and commentator. And he coined that in the late 80s when he said, look at all these young folks fighting against what then was called the criminal justice system. Now we see the bigger term is now mass incarceration. And he said, this is a generation that grew up under what we call hip hop culture, not just the music, but all the elements of hip hop culture. And he coined that. So what happened in the mid 90s is that some of us began to say, wait, I'm not an MC. I'm not a DJ. I'm not a graph artist. I'm not a B-girl or B-boy, these elements of hip hop culture that we know. But I'm the fifth one, the knowledge, culture, and politics given to us by Africa, Bambaataa, and Universal Zulu Nation. So we begin to use hip hop, right? The cultural phenomenon is hip hop, to talk about political issues. So hip hop activism is for like folks like us that are into the culture, but participate in the fifth element. We're the journalists, we're the commentators. A lot of us are now professors that teach hip hop. And to see the culture bigger than just rap music or what is on the mainstream or seen on a commercial.
I guess my question is, everything you say about the Green Party and the platform are things that do align with like, you know, young activists and activist culture and hip hop and music of all genres, of people feeling like they want a more inclusive and progressive world. And yet there seems to be a sense of like, what can the Green Party do to really connect with that and popularize that? I guess, you know, it feels like like in a way that like Black Lives Matter sort of exploded out of a hashtag, but then it sort of is a way for a lot of people to connect around, oh yes, I connect with all those things. There's something about it that becomes popular that hasn't happened with the Green Party.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing right now happening with Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka is going to popularize the Green Party. And mainly why? Because the mainstream media has now decided to cover them. So like even the CNN town hall that happened, that was the first time ever CNN has had on the presidential
I'll
and
take
vice
credit
presidential
for that since
candidate.
I work at CNN sometimes.
I
I'll
know.
Take credit for that.
I told Jill and Ajamu, you pushed the button that was sent the e-bites to everybody.
Tell Jill to come on our podcast. We keep inviting
her. I will. Okay. Her and Ajamu. I'm going to tell Ajamu as soon as I get off with y'all. Right. Look, you don't underestimate. I don't underestimate the media. But I think some people really underestimate media literacy for young folks. And if they don't see it out there and it's not in their Snapchat, Instagram or whatever, or it's not trending, they're not seeing it. And the Green Party has to step into the 21st century around how we market, how we brand the party. And folks have pushed back against me on that, but they're older and they just don't get young folks, right? And I'm 44 and I have to always keep myself in check with young folks. Like, what's the new thing? How do I connect? How do I remain relevant at my age to a younger generation around political commentary and the work I do? Well, the Green Party has to do the same. And the only way it's going to happen with the Green Party is if seriously the leadership and the infrastructure of the party allows for people of color to really take leadership and not fight us at every turn. And that's some of the internal things that are happening with the Green Party. And that's not good.
Rosa, before we let you go, I have to ask this question. I feel like there's a lot of us who don't particularly like Trump or Hillary in this situation and say we're voting for Hillary because what choice do we really have? And I've said this. I've also said this just because I don't particularly like Trump and it feels like, well, at least Hillary's somewhat viable. Can you give us your brutally honest take on Hillary Clinton?
I mean, I think she's a neoliberal. You know, I think she's a Republican moderate and light. You know, she's a war hawk. I think she's going to pass TPP. I don't care what she says. I in my gut feel she's going to pass TPP. I feel that she was an advisor to her president, her husband's presidency. Like people, like she was the first lady. No, she was an advisor, a straight up advisor. She advised him on expanding mass incarceration and welfare reform and all these neoliberal policies that have gotten people what they were voting against. Right. But I also think, look, I believe voting is a very personal choice. I don't ever believe in voting for the lesser of two evils. I vote my conscience and what I want a politician to be like, not one that I'm afraid of. Am I afraid of Donald Trump? Yes. Am I just as afraid of Hillary Clinton? Yes. And I was just talking to one of the young people from Ferguson. Well, he's not younger than me, Tef Poe. And he was one of the frontline young people on those front lines with the Ferguson rebellion. And he said, Rosa, what people don't understand and why we don't care about any of these politics, no matter who's coming to us, is we already live in Donald Trump's America. Black and brown poor people already live there. And I had to think about that, right? And sit with that for a second, because those of us who have these privileges don't understand what it's like to be in these dire economic conditions that the majority of people are in. So people are going to vote how they want. And, you know, I think that you have to wake up the next day after you vote and then still fight for what you want. Even if your candidate gets in, you still have to hold your candidate accountable. And whoever gets in, all the people have to hold them accountable, because essentially you are president of the United States, not just of those who voted for you. And I just think Democrats are going to be highly more disappointed than they ever thought they could be with a Hillary Clinton presidency. But it's not me to tell people how to vote. It's, you know, me to let you know and be honest and just say, you know, we need to break this two-party system. We shouldn't be having to choose between two parties at this point in our lives anyway.
Rosa, thank you for this. This has been great. We really appreciate this. It has led me a lot to think about, because I sort of found myself in the lesser two evils camp, and now I find myself maybe in the pie in the sky camp, the voting my conscience camp, I guess I'll say.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, you know, I would tell all of those listeners that are in the Green Party, we still have to work just as hard the next day, right? We have to grow a party. We have to get people into the Senate and into Congress, and then people will probably take us not more seriously, but we'll say, wait, they got an assembly person, they have a city council person, they have a mayor. Because no matter what happens, we still have to pass public policy and make laws that benefit the people. So, you know, I'm just choosing to maybe be, again, in the margins. But I always think the margins end up being the center with the people moving forward. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
All right. Peace.
So, Hari, what did we learn today?
Well, I learned money fucks up everything in the system. Before that, I thought money was a good thing.
Isn't that a hip-hop song? Money fucks up everything around me?
Money fucks everything around me. No, I don't think so.
I learned that the Green Party has to run federal elections just so they can stay on the ballot for the other elections.
I learned that Democrats are more of an adversary to the Green Party than Republicans.
I learned that John Legend and me have the same size bank account. I don't know that that's true. If so, he needs to talk to his manager, because he's been getting ripped off. I learned that Hillary Clinton is a moderate Republican. And I learned that I just pissed off a lot of our listeners. I learned that going to hell is a lot like taking the subway.
I learned that Rosa is $150,000 in student debt. You know, like everyone running for vice president.
Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to all who have commented on Twitter using the hashtag PoliticallyReactive. Keep them coming through the election. We love hearing from you.
And if you haven't done so yet, hit that subscribe button on whatever you're using to listen to this. And maybe think about leaving us a nice little review. Super helpful. Great way to spread the word about the show.
And thanks again to Rosa Clemente for joining us. Please do check out the Truth to Power tour she is doing on campuses all over America. Go to rosaclemente.net. And we hope you'll consider checking out some of our other projects as well. I have a new album out now called Semi-Prominent Negro, and Hari has a comedy album out called Mainstream American Comic. You can buy them both at killrockstars.com.
Also, I'm doing shows all over the country in the next couple of months. I'm in Houston on October 22nd, Dallas on October 23rd, Philly on October 30th, Toronto, hello Canada, November 4th, New York on the 5th, Pittsburgh on the 6th, and Boston on November 12th. So I hope to see you all there. You can get more information on HariKundabolu.com.
I've got some other cool podcasts, too, like Denzel Washington is the Greatest Actor of All Time, period. My live radio show and podcast come out right now. And we have our one-year anniversary show coming up on October 27th with Alicia Garza, Jesse Klein, and Anna Sale. You can check all that out at KALW.org. And I'm going on tour, too. I'm doing some stand-up October 13th in Washington, D.C., October 14th at the Gramercy Theater in New York City, October 15th in Boston, Massachusetts, October 21st at the Aladdin Theater in Portland, Oregon. Two shows. The early show is already sold out. The late show still has tickets available. Come on, Portland. Get at me.
Politically Reactive is a production of First Look Media and distributed by Panoply. The team includes Nick Borenstein, Lisa Langang, Erica Moo, and Max Jacobs. The show is engineered by Ted Muldoon. Thanks to Northgate Studios in Berkeley, and thanks to Argo Studios in New York City. And thanks to Brontes Purnell for providing music for the show. Rest in peace, Jose Fernandez.